You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. That's horrible.
For CJLO News, I'm Zach Dutra. During the Grand Prix races in Montreal, advocates warned of a darker side to the festivities. Before the Grand Prix races, the Concertation des luttes contre l'exploitation sexuelle, or La CLE, a feminist community organization, launched its Un trop Grand Prix sexual exploitation awareness campaign. This campaign is in its 12th year. In a press release, La CLE said this year's campaign aims to, quote, remind people that the purchase of sexual acts is a criminal act in Canada. The purchasing of sexual acts has been illegal in Canada since 2014. Jenny Laure Sully, a community organizer for La CLE, spoke about the sex work that takes place during big events.
Whenever you have big events and you have in big urban areas a situation where there's like a concentration of people in big urban areas, prostitution goes up. The pimps see that as an opportunity to make more money.
Not everyone agrees with La CLE's mission. Jen Clayman, a mobilization and communications coordinator at Stella, an organization run by and for sex workers, said this while referring to La CLE.
They're extremely anti-sex work. They're a group that relies and pushes for the use of criminal laws and the use of the carceral system to address violence against women. They assume that all sex work in and of itself is violent, and so they make no distinction between sex work and exploitation.
In an email response, the SPVM said their officers are extra vigilant during major international events, including the Grand Prix. With lots of people in the city, they pay, quote, particular attention to the demand for sexual services from minors. Sully said people have come forward to tell La CLE about their experiences with pimps recruiting younger women.
From parents, from the survivors of the sex trade also, who've been there, who say, during that time, I received text messages from pimps telling me, do you have a younger friend that you could refer to us?
Outside of the Grand Prix weekend, La CLE will continue their campaign with a podcast that is set to release over the summer. Sully added that the podcast will make sure the voices of survivors are heard. For more news, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO on Spotify.
Cause I'll be your lifeline, I'll be your lifeline. Welcome to Eastern Promises, the latest and greatest music coming from Atlantic Canada. I'm your host, Donald Roberge, and that was the song Lifeline, new music by a new band, Halifax's Strange Plants, whose self-titled debut album dropped on June the 6th. That band's formed by Matthew Brannan and Travis Flint of Nova Scotia alt-country act Hot Mundy. Strange Plants joyfully embraces and honors its influences, ranging from everything from 70s prog rock, 60s garage jangling, and 80s synth pop, creating something that's nostalgically fresh. And the album was recorded in Nashville at the historic Creative Workshop Studio. You know, there's a nice article in The Coast, Halifax's free alternative weekly, that gives you good insight into the band, and you can find it at thecoast.ca, but definitely ones to watch. So we have a special episode lined up for you this evening, our 50th here at Eastern Promises. You know, 50 may not seem like a big number when it comes to radio episodes, but it's relative, of course. And when I started this journey, I'd be hard-pressed to agree that we'd reach this number, given the many other commitments I have. But here we are, with the support of friends, family, the station, and the East Coast music community. I'm proud to not only have gotten this far, but to be thriving, with lots of requests and opportunities to keep feeding this outlet for presenting music from Atlantic Canada to our beautiful city. And on that note, I'm happy to be celebrating our 50th episode by presenting a feature interview with one of the East Coast's great ambassadors, musician, songwriter, and highly sought-out producer, Mike Trask. Fresh on the heels of his latest release, Beat. I'll be airing that a little later on in the show, but let's hear a track from it. From Beat, this is Mike Trask with 40 Fathoms Back.
She got lost in a tub of trawl, something she won't regret at all. Sell it now for the prices fall, as quick as you can. He got lost in a dipper net, something he won't regret. That's his blood and sweat on the flatbeds heading to Japan. Some sink, some get the blues, and some drink. Freedom smells so sweet, the prices stink. They got callus on their hands. Two knots more than 40 fathoms back. Two knots more than 40 fathoms back. 40 fathoms back. Piercing eyes who sit and wait for red night skies and find no comfort on the shore. Where hope floats on top of water, but all the money is at the bottom. The truth sits somewhere in between the fresh bait and the rotten.
Swanee per Il Popolo and Something for the Mood on CJLO presents Tatako Minikawa, Mino Kawasaki, and Joni Void at La Sauterenia on Wednesday, June 25th. Don't miss out! Tickets and more information can be found at swanee per il popolo.org, and keep listening to CJLO for more features on everything Swanee per Il Popolo has to offer.
Push that button.
Yo, one to them.
How about
yo,
this one?
One to them.
Say something quick. The security guard coming.
What?
Say something quick.
Say what?
The Caribbean Callaloo, the 2 times award-winning show on CJLO. 1690 on your AM dial every Saturday from 2 p.m. till 4 p.m. 514-848-7471.
Who's that girl, boy?
You can't talk, but you can see her.
Welcome back to Eastern Promises, where we're celebrating our 50th episode, introducing, honoring, and otherwise promoting the music of Atlantic Canada. I'm Donald Roberge, and before the break, you heard the latest by Halifax's Montgomery Knight, a song called Knave. The story goes that their guitarist Evan Jackson wrote a God-given riff that the band rallied around, and the result is a pretty banging track. The title, by the way, is his name backwards, and it's also the first of 3 singles they'll be putting out this summer, leading up to a debut EP this fall. We'll let you know when that drops. In the meantime, you can find Knave on all the major streaming platforms. And before that, I played 40 Fathoms Back, new music by the extraordinary East Coast musician, songwriter, and producer Mike Trask from his recently released LP called Beat. Mike was gracious enough to make time in his busy schedule to talk to me about the record, what it means to be an East Coast musician, why he's drawn to recording with Analog, and I have to say, despite his modest demeanor, the interview gives you a great sense of his artistic process, his intellect, and his perspective and passion for both art and how it percolates in Atlantic Canada. So have a listen. Here's my interview with Mike Trask.
So, Mike Trask, how are you?
I'm very good, Donald. How about you?
I'm good, thanks. Where are you coming from today? Where are you?
I'm in a place called Jador in Nova Scotia.
In Nova Scotia?
Yeah, Nova Scotia, yeah.
Is that where you live?
I kind of split my time half between Nova Scotia and New Brunswick these days.
Oh, I see. Where are you from originally?
I'm from here, a place called Musquodoboit Harbor, which is kind of near where I'm at right now. So east of Halifax, about 45 minutes is where I was born.
I want to get right into it. Your new record, yeah. Beet, it's spelled beet as in the vegetable, B-E-E-T. Yes. That was released May 12th, and it's your 11th full-length release. The first since 2021's critically acclaimed record, TV Dinner. And it's kind of a departure of sorts. It's got straight guitar, drum, and bass really propelling it, as opposed to the more complex sounds of TV Dinner. And it's a record that, you know, while TV Dinner was like a culmination of your musical journey to that point, this was more of a stripped back sounding album. Yeah. What went into that? Why the decision to go that route?
I think it was a little bit of like wanting things to feel a bit more organic this time. And I did a lot more with the band off the floor. TV Dinner, I played most of the stuff on it. So I just wanted it to be a bit more like, you know, I wanted to involve other people this time and keep it, I think, a little more rootsy, you know. No particular reason on why I wanted it to be rootsy, but it just ended up that's the direction I wanted to go. And then it just led me to involve more people. It was kind of a nicer kind of team effort and kind of go back to kind of like more like I listened to so much Bob Dylan, Neil Young and stuff like that. So TV Dinner was definitely different than that. So I wanted to get kind of back to that, I guess. Or I don't know if I've ever done a record quite as rootsy maybe as this one.
Well, certainly, it still has that edge to it that you've brought in the past. But after listening to it, I was also surprised that it had been recorded like right off the floor.
Yeah, most of it.
Over the course of a short period of time, I think it was a weekend. And I mean, it sounds loose, and it even sounds a bit improvisatory, but it also has like a polished feel to it. Specifically, the vocals on the album, and given that you're a record producer, you know how difficult that is to pull off. Really, my question is, how did you pull that off?
A few of the tunes are overdubbed, three of them, I think, but most of it's live. And I guess, just kind of practicing a lot, and, I practiced them some, not too much. I mean, I hired my longtime band to come in, even though they didn't know the tunes. It still made it a lot easier to focus. So just having the right people surrounding me kind of enabled me to be comfortable enough to sing off the floor, which is something rare for myself to do or to sing off the floor. So I think it had a lot to do with that, just surrounding myself with people that made me so comfortable. I didn't have to worry that much about if the parts were going to be right or if it was going to be in time or out of time. I could rely on the band, and it really helped.
Yeah, it sounded like you really captured lightning in a bottle, and I think that has a lot to do with who you surrounded yourself with during its recording. Involved, you've got Adam Mowry, vocalist for St. John's recording project, Papal Visit. Yeah. You got the extraordinary percussionist, Matt Gallant.
Yeah.
Fredericton blues guitarist, Keith Hallett. Can also be heard on that, which is really impressive that you got him involved. And I'm sure I'm missing other people, but
no, that's the whole team on this one.
Oh, is it? Oh,
yeah.
But was it organic? I mean, was that something that did you hand select them specifically, knowing that you would get a kind of sound that you wanted for Beat, or was it just kind of did it just kind of evolve that way?
Well, I've been playing with Adam for probably 15 years, and so we definitely got a sound. And then Matt, I use anytime I can. He's very busy. So he plays with me live most of the time, but anytime I can. And Keith actually owns the studio where my gear lives right now and that we did it in. So it wasn't a spur of the moment decision, but definitely keeping that crew. I mean, there was a few people I would have liked to have on it that couldn't make it, but like keeping that crew, definitely I knew I could achieve what something like we did, you know.
You also, you mixed it yourself, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
You produced the album. And if I think you did it off tape.
Usually tape. Yeah. Most things I do.
I was going to ask you about that. Is that you seem to have an affinity for using analog and recording off tape. And I'm just wondering why, considering everything that's out there. And by the way, I'm all for it. I mean, I think we're similar generation. You know, I get that you have a particular kind of effect that comes from doing that. I understand it, but I'm just wondering if it's more practical to do it for you, or if it's an aesthetic decision. I'm just wondering why you choose to keep up with the analog.
When I started doing it, I was 25, that was 15 years ago, and it wasn't current then, you know. It was already antiquated, but I did it the first time. I learned from a guy named Garrett Mason. I heard his record, and I said, why does this sound like the records I want to make? And I met him by chance after I heard the record, and he told me, I did it on tape. And I didn't even know what tape was at that time. I had done a few records on Pro Tools and stuff like that. So I did that my first time. So it was the sound that really grabbed me. But then as I did more, and I would do it when it was available, then maybe I'd do some computer stuff. And I also noticed that the flow was so different, and I loved the flow of it, you know, the stopping, the play, the rewind, the moments, the organic of like, where are we at in the song? We got to find it. There's no like, and also I don't like looking at sound, you know, on the screen. I think that's best saved for maybe some sort of analysis of room acoustics. I think it can come into that. But in terms of making rock and roll or anything with, I don't think looking at waveforms has ever helped in my experience. It's usually confused the people listening. So there's kind of these, and I like the sound of it, obviously. I like to distort stuff. I like the sound of when you hit tape hard. I like the happy mistakes that come with it. And I like that I can usually fix it when it breaks. And if it breaks, you don't lose the whole thing. Like a tape machine breaks down, there's no doubt, but you never lose the whole thing you did that day. Maybe you lose that moment, you got to start over. So, and if it breaks down, maybe it takes a day or two to get the parts, but we can always fix it. You can identify what's wrong. And I've learned more about that as time's gone on to fix my own gear. So it's just like tube amps. It's just, it's a dependable, it's got a label as undependable, but for me, it's more dependable because I can fix it. And my love of it drives me to learn those things. So it's kind of all those reasons together, you know? And I just love the way they look. I love the way it smells. I love everything about it, you know?
Light explodes, but I ain't God's gift. My thing don't shift, and I only go backwards.
I wanted to talk about your record, your new release, Beat. It's named after the root vegetable. It's got a painting of it on the cover, lovely painting of it. And I was wondering what the inspiration was for the album's name. Now, I have a theory. I don't know if you want to hear it or not.
Sure, I'd like to hear it because,
I suspect that, you know, it refers to, you know, beats. So it's got a kind of an earthiness to it. You know, when you think of a beat, it's got a specific odor, flavor. Even when you wash them, they still feel like they're very much out of the ground. They're literally like a root, you know? And that's not unlike that approach to music you hear on the record. I also think it's kind of a a clever play on words with, you know, beat being a rhythmic beat. And also the words association with beat poetry, even, which is famous for its spontaneity and counterculturalism. I don't know if I'm in the ballpark or not, or if you want to expand on that.
Well, if I can be honest with you, I name the records usually before, like when I'm starting the records, usually I get the name. So TV Dinner was the same. And before that, I had an album called Fantasy Man. And Derealization before that. And all of those were named before it was done. And, you know, I don't know always why, you know, the names come, because I'm a big believer that art kind of finishes itself. You know what I mean? So the name came to me while looking at a beat that was cut in half and looking into it and the depth of it. You know what I mean? Like the depth of that color. And I'm not trying to say the album has depth. I would never make that claim. But just that's when I got the idea of, like, because I gardened a lot in the last 10 years. And some of the things you pull out of the garden are just so incredible. Like, how does the sunflower grow from the seed? And you're looking at these 14-foot tall things. And the beat is one of those things that, like the color is so powerful. Like you say, the smell is so powerful. And again, I would never say the album is powerful or anything like that. I just mean that that's when I first got the idea, was like, there's something about this that embodies more than just this vegetable in the moment. You know, it's like, it says so much. And I love all of your interpretations of it. And I would say that a lot of them probably would point to why I named it, but I try not to dissect it and more get shown why I named it. I think that part of it has to do with a play on words too. Also some moments where I think, I like the idea that when I'm doing radio interviews and nobody explains how it's spelled, that it could mean beat up. Beat is in music, but probably nobody is suspecting it's a vegetable beat. So I like those little twists and turns, but there's, for me, it was just the magic of the growth of the garden, and how does this thing grow underground and then come out with such a, like, you know, like they, when you cut them up, like you were saying, you cut them up and you get them, they get on everything, but then they don't stain. Someone brought that up to me, like they don't stay on your hands, but like they're just magical, I thought, you know. So anyway, I don't have a great answer on why I named it that, but I like your answers.
Great answers. No,
I like your answers too, Donald.
Well, it's amazing that how a word and how an object can really inspire interpretation, you know? Something as simple as a beat.
Sorry, yeah, that would be the goal of any of it. The songs, the lyrics, any of it. Anything that's more subjective and stream of consciousness. Some people, like one of the tunes, Take It From Me, I would say I don't really know what it's about. And I love when people tell me what they think it's about. And I say, like, you know what? You could be right, you know? As I got older, I shied away from stream of consciousness stuff. And I try to still write that way if I can. But the album names, even TV Dinner, I don't really know why I called it that. But stream of consciousness, and then it takes on all these meanings, I hope. It's my dream. So I love that it is projecting things into your mind.
Are you behind the painting on the cover?
No, my sister painted that.
Well, tell her it's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I love it. And it was I always get someone to paint my covers, but I never give any direction. And in this case, I just told my sister I want some beats. And she did it with the palette brush on canvas and oil paint, so the texture. And then the one beat that's cut in two that almost looks like a heart, which I don't know if she did it on purpose or not. So thank you so much, and I'll definitely tell her.
You're also a producer. You've made a career as a successful producer. And I was excited at the prospect of interviewing the man behind Acadian soul metal ensemble Les Moontoons' award-winning 2024 record, Elephant Wizard. That album gets a lot of airtime in our household.
That's so awesome.
And it also has an air of improvisation, of confidence, of courage, really, to go against convention. And these are elements that I also found to be in beat. So I was wondering if that experience producing their record informed your recording of Beat as well. Do you think there's some kind of a thorough line there? Whether it's
always, I think, you know, like, I remember when I was working with the Moontoons and we were getting the demos and they were like, they wanted to be heavy. And I don't know if you're familiar with their first record, but it's not really heavy. Heavy as in, you know, heavy music, like rock or heavy, like they're very into Black Sabbath or stuff like that. And I remember them telling me that, we want it to be heavy. And I said, oh, I don't think anyone knows that yet. So I said, so that's what we'll do, you know? And I think that kind of echoed in me when we came to that conclusion. It kind of echoed in me of like, sometimes you do something and you're like, oh, I want it to be rootsy, and people don't know. They're like, oh, I didn't get that. So it kind of helped me with Beat to think, okay, I want it to be rootsy. I should make it rootsy. You know what I mean? And rootsy just as in the instruments, you know? So less delay, like, I mean, less synth, less trippy stuff or whatever, you know what I mean? So I think in that way, like, they were one of the last records I would have done before Beat, I think. And definitely, I think it helped me. It always informs me sonically too. We did so much on that record. There's two drummers. There was 20 inputs on the bed tracks, which is a lot for me. And I really learned a lot about drums from Marty, the drummer, and sounds. So, I think there's definitely a line there. You know what I mean? Whether intentional or not, looking back, when you started asking me, I started thinking about it.
It feels like Americana sounds are having a bit of a moment in the Maritimes right now. Mm-hmm. New Brunswick roots and blues musician Matt Anderson recently got singled out in a Rolling Stone article as one to watch. PEI's Jos Rayome recently won a top prize at the prestigious International Blues Challenge. These are just a few examples. But what do you feel the Maritimes, and maybe New Brunswick specifically, why do you think it's so in tune and so vital when it comes to roots music? And what's producing such quality artists?
I'm not sure, you know. I mean, I think some of it is a specific way of life east of Montreal. And it starts in Montreal. I mean, Ontario's bad winters, Montreal's bad winters. But something else happens when you get, you know, a little further east. And I think every city you go to has a feel, you know, I find. Every town you go to, every province. And musically, when you're traveling, they all have a feel. You know, Saskatchewan, you know, you can picture, you can hear the sounds almost in your heads. You know what I mean? Montreal, you can hear the sounds. And on the East Coast, it's eclectic, but I think that there's a way of life over here that speaks to a rootsy side, you know? I mean, there's all kinds of great artists, amazing artists out here who are doing different things, obviously, than roots music and being successful at it. But, you know, I think even if you take out the genre of roots, there's a quality of music out here that definitely is very high. And I don't know if it's the salt air or if it's the... And roots music definitely is having a moment, which, you know, I don't know how many people are doing that on purpose, you know, or if things are... Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't think of it. And I started it 2 years ago, and I suspect some of these other artists did too. But it kind of happens, you know?
I only ask because I've been playing quite a bit of roots musicians from out east, and the quality is really remarkable. I mean, the same can be said for other genres, but specifically for folk, blues, mm-hmm. roots, it's been really staggering how good the quality has been, especially even with young musicians who are coming out.
I agree.
It kind of leads me into the next question, which is, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. you've been all over this country. You've been around performing for a number of years now. You know, you get a sense of what sounds come from where and what's tuned into what. How do you feel the Maritime experience has informed your own musicianship, your own art?
Well, you know, there's a few artists here that I don't know if I ever met stronger artists than a few of them that are here. And I had a, you know, I was so lucky when I was young to get my band was, I always was lucky to find band members that were much better than me and much more experienced than me. And I was always so fortunate with who agreed to play with me. And a lot of those players came from April Wine, one of them, Jim Hemman, big mentor of mine, Charlie Phillips, Ainsley Jardine, played with Dutch Mason, Garrett Mason's dad. And, you know, and it's like, I think that I've learned a lot about, I mean, I learned a lot about blues out here, you know, and God, that's a tough question. I mean, it's hard to say how they've informed me, I guess.
Well, let me ask you another way. What's inspiring you these days?
Yeah, it's a good, great question.
No, but what is there anything locally that's inspiring you these days? Whether it's music or art or anything specific?
Yeah, I mean, a lot. Owen Steele. Do you know Owen Steele?
I don't.
I should check. Like, Owen put out a record recently that really is like nobody ever, I don't know anyone who ever did anything like that on the East Coast. You know, it's Waitsy without meaning to be, Tom Waitsish. You know, it's avant-garde, but rootsy. So Owen really inspired me with that one. My good buddy Keith Hallett always inspires me. Garrett Mason always inspires me. I spent a lot of time in Acadie with around the Hey Babies. And recorded a lot with Julio Bay, and they continue to inspire me. In Halifax, there's a band called Shadow Folk from Truro, who really inspired me recently. You know, it's like in Fredericton, there's multiple artists, and I mean it's. I'm always getting inspired here, and as I find, as everybody grows, they inspire me more. But then it's also like so many of the young artists coming out do things so differently because of their fresh minds that it's so inspiring, you know. So yeah, I mean, I'm loving it here right now on the East Coast. There's a lot happening, a lot of good music coming out.
What's next for Mike Trask this year? What do you have happening this summer? Do you have any surprises in store? I know you have a couple of festival dates happening in Cape Breton in July. Maybe a Mud Hill reunion?
Yeah, no, I don't know about a Mud Hill reunion, though. I got some festivals. I'm doing quite a bit of recording. I'm going to Vancouver to record an artist in September, which is exciting. Also, I'm going to Dawson, Yukon for the second time this year with Keith Hallett. We did a tour up there in September and we're returning, which is like so exciting for me. Cape Breton. It's not a crazy busy summer for me, but that's okay. It's more, I moved around a lot the past 2 years. And it took a while for Beat to come out, and I'm kind of settling into new studio space and stuff like that. So I have a few projects on the go. It's a chill summer, but I'm excited for it. But there's definitely some things I'm working on, some things not announced yet. But I'm working on moving my studio right now, and that's really exciting. So producing is a big part of my life and recording artists. And Beat was something that I struggled with, putting it out, not putting it out. Am I going to do it? Am I going to do vinyls? And so it's finally out, and I'm trying to let it speak for itself. And I'm you know, I appreciate the interview so much, and people seem to be digging it. So it's a little bit of my return to touring. I didn't tour a lot the past few years because I was recording so many records. So I'm kind of settling back into that lifestyle.
All right, I have one last question for you, Mike. Yes, and I ask this of everybody I interview. What's the coolest thing you ever came across at a merch table? Mine is a couple. I'll give you an example. Mine are a couple of, I found some cufflinks at a Joe Jackson concert that say stepping out on them. I thought that was pretty rad.
That's pretty wild. And I can't remember who, but I remember ashtrays one time. And I thought that was pretty hip. But, I mean, I'm not a smoker, but I have an affinity for vintage ashtrays just for the memorabilia sake. And I remember thinking that that was pretty rad. To have ashtrays.
Well, Mike Trask, I want to thank you for taking the time to speak to us today. And I wish you nothing but success moving forward with this new release. It's an exceptional one.
Thanks so much. And thanks for pushing the East Coast. There's so many artists out here that work so hard. And it's great for someone from, Montreal, living in Montreal, that feels the need to help expose the East Coast. It really means a lot. And I see a lot of people you're playing. They're friends of mine, and we all appreciate it.
Great to hear. Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, he's a young man with a bad back from working too hard. Too old for that shit. Too young to give it up. But he ain't no sad sack that ain't got no heart. All he's ever known is his bones are supposed to hurt. What are you waiting for? The voice still rings. Roll up your sleeves, boy. Go take the pain. What are you praying for? One of these days I want my back to stop hurting, but my bills to get paid. So he's been on the ladder, never got him nowhere. Cause you gotta come down to get paid around here. It got him high for a little bit, like the closest to heaven he's ever gonna get. What are you waiting for? The voice still rings. Roll up your sleeves, boy, go take the pain. What are you praying for? One of these days I want my back to stop hurting, but my bills to get paid. Well, the eagle flies on Friday, it's the best he's gonna get. But he ain't waiting for Monday, he ain't waiting for cigarettes. What are you waiting for? The voice still rings. Roll up your sleeves, boy, go take the pain. What are you praying for? One of these days I want my back to stop hurting, but my bills to get paid. I want my back to stop hurting, but my bills to get paid. I want my back to stop hurting, but my bills to get paid.
Horrid, you're ghastly, and I love you true. So here are some presents I'm sending to you.
If you consider yourself a goblin, ghost, or a ghoul, then you should listen to Deadbeats on Fridays from 3 to 4 with your ghost at the most, me, Pretty Dead Boy. I play most things emo and alternative, and I promise it's just to die for.
You're the coolest little monster that ever put the spook on me.
CJLO is proud to present Initial Shock, Montreal's Noise Festival, featuring artists such as Mass Marriage, Deaf Neil, Apologist, Matriarch, Anne F. Jacques, Taskmaster, and many more. Initial Shock takes place on July 5th at La Sauterenia and July 6th at Petit Ours. Advance tickets available now at initialshock.screamandwrithe.com. Proudly presented by CJLO.
Welcome back to Eastern Promises. Before the break, you heard Roll Up Your Sleeves by Maritime musical artist and producer Mike Trask from his latest release, Beat, which you can find on streaming platforms everywhere and, of course, on vinyl. And you can purchase it online at miketraskmusic.bandcamp.com. Many thanks to Mike for his time, and we'll be publishing a written transcript of that interview on our website as part of CJLO's magazine. I know there were some audio issues, and it's one of the few drawbacks of being able to reach busy people anytime, anywhere in this country. But, you know, you get a good sense of our exchange and of the wisdom Mike Trask has to impart. So look out for that. Here's one of the many artists he was throwing flowers at during our interview, and another example of the rich blues and roots legacy that's alive and well on the East Coast. Here's Truro, Nova Scotia's Garrett Mason with Shake a Leg.
Down, I've been out, but I crawl back
Spinning out the latest by Halifax power pop trio Gardner from their recently released debut EP, Can I Tell You a Secret? A real throwback in my mind to the pop explosion of the 90s. That one was produced by Willie Stratton, the guitarist for the Boojums. Yet another example of the cross collaboration between artists out east. You can find that on streaming platforms everywhere. And before that, I played Shake a Leg by the great Nova Scotia blues musician Garrett Mason from his 2008 record, Love and Sound. And you can find tonight's playlist by visiting the Eastern Promises show page at cjlo.com or via my Instagram handle at EasternPromisesCJLO. It'll be a short one this week, but feel free to explore playlists from my past episodes while you're there. You'll get a good cross-section of all the impressive and exciting music that's coming from Atlantic Canada. So that's a wrap for episode 50 of Eastern Promises. Let's go out with one of the more popular tracks I've played in our first 50 episodes. This is Baie Sainte-Marie, Nova Scotia's Psy Béliveau, who was a headliner at Festival Bleu Bleu at Carleton-sur-la-Mer, Quebec this weekend, a festival CJLO has been proud to endorse and to sponsor, happening from June 20th to the 23rd. Festivalbleubleu.com is the address, so check it out. This one's dedicated to my daughter Annabelle. This is with Income Tax. Yeah, Income Tax. Did you get your return? I got my return. It hurt. But anyway, Income Tax by Psy Béliveau. For Eastern Promises, I'm Donald Roberge. Till next time.
Un autre blues sonne sur la joie. Papa gouverne, mais on monarque dans son corps. Souvent je fais les affaires last minute. Ma point mes income tax, ça m'excite. Pis ça fait chaque semaine que je les ai filés. Check ma mailbox au moins 4 fois every day. Oh man, qu'au sexte let il sait qui ferait d'arriver. Ferait d'avoir mon income tax return. Tonight the party never. City never sleeps. pire qu'all tous mes frettes. Hier dit que t'soir au party jusqu'au lendemain. Puis point à woody sur les snacks ou la bose. À cause mes poches sont pleines and I'ma blow a fuse. Va blow et friggin' 200 pièces à Walmart.
Va blow et friggin' 200 pièces à Walmart.
Va blow et friggin' 40 pièces au Taco Bell.
Va blow et friggin' 40 pièces au Taco Bell.
Va remplir ma car de friggin' Supreme Gas.
Va remplir ma car de friggin' Supreme Gas.
Va blow et friggin' 300 pièces au liquor store.
Va blow et friggin' 300 pièces au liquor store.
Walmart.